When it comes to the lean executive recruiting landscape, staying ahead means staying informed. Subscribing to the Stiles Associates email list gives you access to the latest compensation data, industry analysis, and career resources straight from their recruiting team. Plus, you'll receive hand-picked career opportunities from leading companies, whether you're seeking new challenges or just curious about the market. So head over to leanexecs.com and sign up to get on the Stiles Associates email list and transform the way you make strategic decisions for your company and your career. Thanks for listening. Did you know I can help your organization on this journey of cultivating a culture of learning and innovation? I can be a trainer, coach, and advisor on topics including psychological safety, problem solving, and continuous improvement. I can add value to your management team meetings by speaking and facilitating discussions on these important topics. To learn more, visit markgraben.com or email me, mark@markgraben.com. Let's improve together.
Welcome to the Lean Blog Podcast. Visit our website at www.leanblog.org. Now, here's your host, Mark Graben.
Hi, this is Mark Graben. Welcome to the podcast, episode 268. My guest today is Tom Ehrenfeld, a longtime friend of mine in the Lean community and Lean Enterprise Institute circles. He is a writer and editor living in Cambridge, Massachusetts. A former writer and editor with Inc. magazine and Harvard Business Review, Tom is the author of the book, The Startup Garden, How Growing a Business Grows You. He works as a consulting editor for LEI and with many other Lean authors. He's a regular contributor to LEI's website, The Lean Post, and eight of his edited books have won the Shingo Research Award. So today we're going to talk about some of the books he's played a role with. We'll talk about the evolution of the understanding of Lean and his thoughts on shifting from his experience covering startups to thinking about the Lean startup methodology in more recent years. So if you would like links to his books, articles, podcasts with other authors that we reference in the discussion here, go to leanblog.org/268. Tom, hey, it's great to talk to you again, and thank you for being a guest on the podcast.
Hey, Mark, thank you. I'm really, really happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm happy you're here, and I'm trying to think back. We won't do root cause analysis about why the heck I haven't had you on the show before.
Okay.
But here we are, so I'm glad we're having we're going to have a good conversation today. So, you know, for listeners who don't know you, who haven't met you or run across you, you know, through LEI circles, why don't you introduce yourself and some of your background in your career, and we'll dive into some of the details. But describe yourself in a nutshell, I guess, for the audience. How's that?
Okay, yeah. Let me crawl out of the nutshell. I have a background as a journalist. So many years ago, I started as a local reporter here in Cambridge. And I loved being a reporter. Being in Cambridge, I covered a lot of people who talked a lot. And I got kind of tired with what people said, reporting on that, and got drawn to narrative, like writing about stories, discovering the consequences of choices that people made. And I found really quickly the best narratives were crime and business. So I really didn't want to become a crime reporter. And I went became a business journalist. So I eventually worked as an editor at HBR, an editor at Inc., both places where I wrote as well. And about 20 years ago, my wife was on bed rest with our second child, my daughter, and I went solo to have a little more flexibility. And I started ghostwriting. That's what I called it at the time. These days, I call it more editorial consulting. Because with ghostwriting comes this almost implicit promise that you're going to write for people, which then becomes that you'll think for clients. And I really believe that being an author is tied to being an authority. So I really try to work with folks who have something to share, and see my job is supporting them through my background and experience. So I got into Lean 10 or 12 years ago, I had written a book of my own called The Startup Garden, which is just how to start a business. And I was starting to promote it and reading other blogs, and somehow Lean Thinking was reissued. I read the book. I reviewed it on my blog because I loved it. And out of that, good old Chet Marchwinsky told Womack, Dr. Womack, about it, about me. And they gave me a couple books. Long story short, which I'm not succeeding at.
That's right.
Jim invited me over and gave me two manuscripts to look at. One of them was The Gold Mine, and the other was Lean Solutions. And he asked if I'd be willing to, if I'd be interested in working. And I was there. I said, yes, yes, please. The Gold Mine, I read and said, it's really cool. I think it needs some work. Lean Solutions, I said, it's wow. And, you know, please let me work with you guys. And that kind of was my introduction. So working on those two books started a relationship with Jim and his colleagues and LAI. And it also became a way for me to learn Lean through my Gemba, which is working with words on paper.
Yeah.
So, you know, I've only done one consulting gig in my life, and we can talk about that later, but you know, my understanding of Lean is really has always come from just working closely with some of the best Lean writers and thinkers. Mm-hmm. So the first two books were The Gold Mine and Lean Solutions, and that since then I've worked extensively for LAI. I think I've done about eight books maybe as editor, and increasingly books beyond LAI. I worked with Art Byrne on both of his books, Dan Markovitz on a couple books he's done, and a new book from this from Michael Ballet, Dan Jones, Ori Fumi, and Jacques Chaise, which will come out next year from McGraw. So,
and what's the title of that book?
At the moment we're calling it The Lean Strategy. And again, not to foreshadow, we can absolutely delighted to talk about that one, as well as any of them, but yeah, so that's my background. Okay. And
so let's the Startup Garden is the thing that comes to mind when you talk about I'm curious if this was the imagery or the metaphor, but in Lean people talk about farmers versus hunters, and a lot of people in business are hunters. They want the quick kill, the quick result, where farmers are you know, kind of taking a longer term approach, just, you know, by nature. Is there a coincidence to what you were talking about with startup, with quote unquote the Startup Garden, or?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. I think the big takeaway for me after covering startups for, you know, for a while and being really excited about it was that the kind of process of growing a business inevitably grew the person or people who founded it. That, you know, there's one set of activities or expertise that helped people find some unique value and deliver it in ways that hadn't been done before. And that you could, you know, do well initially and thrive just transactionally because you were making money. But that any successful business that matured beyond the early phase had to go through a transition. It had to develop capacity to grow, to manage people, to be responsive. And the founders either had to expand and, you know, develop a set of competencies identified in the book, you know, ability to manage people by setting boundaries, rough sense of financial literacy enough to kind of run the company. And so I think it was just this dynamic that prepped me to be so, to embrace Lean so much. Because, it's having an enterprise that delivers value beyond transactions or, you know, discrete outcomes, or you know, that there, you have to kind of grow and have a dynamic to see the business as something organic, generative, that doesn't just grow in terms of bigness, but that expands and becomes something that's well managed and, you know, animated by the people who do the work and are, you know, the heart of the company.
And so then when you had that background, and I want to talk maybe a little bit about Lean Solutions, because, you know, when that book came out, really enjoyed it. I mean, it's been over 10 years now. And it seems like that somehow is my perception, kind of underappreciated book. You know, Lean Thinking has been so widely read. You know, it was the earlier book in that series. And I think there was a lot of really forward thinking stuff in Lean Solutions. Like, I don't know if they exactly predicted Uber. But I mean, there was similar discussion of that, right? That people don't want to buy a car. They want to get from point to point. Am I remembering that clearly, or?
Spot on, man. Yeah. No, I mean, thank you very much. I couldn't agree more. I've always felt that Lean Solutions has never reached the audience that it deserved. That their ideas were amazing and powerful, and that the basic notion was to extend the idea of delivering value with minimum waste and, you know, in the best way, to extend it beyond the production, the delivery of something, to the kind of greater system of in which it's consumed. To go beyond just a car to the notion of mobility, and then to rethink the whole system itself as a way of constantly getting at better sources of value. Yeah. So yeah, it's not car, it's mobility. And absolutely they saw things such as Uber. And parenthetically, Jim Womack continues to write beautifully on these types of themes. He's addressed this in his Yokaten column for Planet Lean, which I have to confess, I'm not his editor. Good on you, Roberto Priolo is, and Roberto's amazing. But Jim's doing great writing and has basically touched upon these types of themes at Planet Lean, and I would really recommend folks to read those.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Lean Solutions, it just, you know, you do the best book you can, and there's a degree of kismet for books to find their audience or not.
Yeah, and there's the most recent book by Clayton Christensen, Competing Against Luck, touches on very similar themes. I mean, it's the old story of, you know, people don't want to buy a drill, they want to buy holes, and it seems like Lean Solutions and Clayton Christensen's new book kind of have similar themes there.
And it goes back to this guy, Ted Levitt, professor of marketing at Harvard Business School, and his famous HBR piece, Marketing Myopia, which was completely focused on that very big insight.
Well, and I'm looking here, pulled up the table of contents from Lean Solutions. And one other thing I wanted to ask you about in terms of, you know, parallel thinking, and because you had been studying startups and wrote about startups and you've been in the lean world, one of chapter 4 of Lean Solutions is titled Don't Waste My Time, which makes me think of Eric Ries and the lean startup movement. A little bit different perspective, where I think Eric is talking about, you know, it's disrespectful to software developers to, you know, to ask them to waste 3 years of their life building some software product that nobody's ever going to buy. What are your thoughts on the lean startup movement, just kind of generally speaking?
Okay. I mean, I feel lucky that, I mean, my thoughts are informed by lean and startups. I mean, I worked at Inc. This was what I covered passionately. And then I'm as big a lean groupie as any. I think what Ries and his crew have done really well is make lean accessible and appealing to a new community. So I think that's really cool. I think that he's taken a slice of the ideas. And I do get cynical, I'll say, because I've been frustrated at times in a way that I think lean has been co-opted, appropriated, that a small piece of the lean ideas, very powerful, valuable ones, mm-hmm. have become really popular in ways that miss the bigger picture of what my understanding of mm-hmm. lean is. And please note, I'm not yeah. saying I'm correct whatsoever, but what I think Lean Startup does really well is take this notion of always starting with value, figure out what it is, do, you know, rapid experiments through MVPs and the pivoting process to remove waste from the value identification process mm-hmm. so that you become a more viable enterprise that much quicker. So I think that's great. My biggest gripe has to do with what it doesn't cover. I really think it's never said anything meaningful about management, about creating sustainable enterprises. And this is my personal assessment. And I think that's really missing the key thing. And if I were to, I guess my only other thing is, I think it's a very instrumental application of a small slice of lean principles designed basically to dress up the value of potential ventures who are valuated at their IPO price tag or, you know, the point is actually not to go public. The point is not to dress up the value of the company. Obviously, that is also the complete point. But is it built to last or built to flip? Hmm. You know, to quote Jim Collins. I've just seen cycles of speculative entrepreneurship where people really, it's like, what's the point of this company? What's the purpose? Mm-hmm. Are you really just trying to create something to sell it to venture capitalists or whomever? You know, where's the enduring value? So I think Lean Startup has identified a powerful set of ideas that people have used, and it's improved their the startup process by removing some waste. But I've just found it to be very narrow sliced in terms of the ideas they use and finally the people who are using it. It's been far less populist, in my opinion. I think it's also creating companies that, in fact, concentrate wealth instead of share it and distribute it. So I have some ambivalence, you know.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, to me, the lean startup movement reminds me of early days of the lean movement where I think people focused too much on, let's say, you know, Kanban and production scheduling strategies and just in time. And none of it was incorrect, but it was maybe incomplete. Losing sight or not delving into or challenging management systems, culture, how to engage everyone in continuous improvement. I don't know how many lean startups would say, oh yeah, we engage every employee in continuous improvement. Or are they using certain tactics that aren't bad or wrong, but maybe are somewhat just incomplete view of lean?
That's what
I would question.
A few things. I even believe there's some talk in the lean startup movement that doing CI is a real challenge, that few companies actually do it and wonder whether that should be a goal. I don't think there should be too orthodox an interpretation of lean practice anywhere. I think that if you go back to TPS, it's about built-in quality and respect for people.
Right.
And that managerial systems should be designed to spot defects when they occur and train people in a common problem-solving approach that's inclusive and, you know, not solution-based but discovery-based. So that people are developed in the course of improving the work. That's it, plain and simple. And If a company's not doing that, then in my opinion, it's not lean.
Yeah. Well, see, I would say that same thing about continuous improvement, because the you have the two pillars of the Toyota production system. You have just in time, flow and built-in quality. And a lot of people ignored the built-in quality piece. And
right.
Then they get down this rat hole of, well, oh, lean is about flow and Six Sigma is for quality. And I'm like, no, I think that's that misses the point of lean. But then you have the Toyota way structure of continuous improvement and respect for people. And, I think there's a lot of, gray area and approaches for, how do you transform an organization as the ballets and Art Byrne and others have talked about. But to me, I would draw the line and say if an organization, whether it's a startup or manufacturer or a hospital, is just using a few, tricks or tactics or methods here and there, should we really label that lean? Or lean, is it lean-ish?
Yeah, and I totally agree. And I do want to say, because I guess more than two people will hear this, good on you, Lean Startup Movement, for sharing and energizing people through these ideas. I think it's really hard. I think Lean's become so popular that there's factions and schools, and God knows, it's not about being right. That's in some ways contrary to the spirit of lean, which is about discovery and openness and not just like stopping conversation. I don't know how to say that claim and also say I disagree with some of what I see. I think it would be contrary to lean spirit to diss them.
Well, I think you can frame it maybe as, a hypothesis where I think you said a couple of minutes ago, continuous improvement is difficult, so maybe that's not necessary. Or you could say, well, my hypothesis would be an organization that doesn't engage people in continuous improvement is not really going to be successful over time in a fast-changing world. So forget lean dogma or anything. My hypothesis would be that's critically important. And yeah, it's difficult, but most things that are worth doing are difficult. What's the Womackism? People will try anything easy that doesn't work before they try something difficult that does.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
So I think you can have a hypothesis. So, well, my hypothesis is you're going to struggle if you go down that path. Prove me wrong, right? I mean, it's possible.
Right, and there's a lot of other stuff I want to talk about, but I also don't even feel part of this crowd. I feel left out. I'm older. I'm not tech-based. I don't swim in the world of software-based startups. I think there's something that's actually not very inclusive about this community, even though it espouses that it is. And again, forgive me. This is, I'm saying this is how I feel.
Sure.
It hasn't always spoken to me. It doesn't align, I guess, with what I see as the purpose of lean, which is kind of building more inclusive companies, more companies that share the wealth. And, I think if you look at the way wealth is distributed for companies that have thrived under lean startup principles, I think at a systems level, it's not, aligned with my values.
Sure.
So,
One other thing I would add maybe, about lean startup and I think parallel sometimes between the world's reaction to Eric Ries and his work and what seems to be sometimes the reaction to Jim Womack and his work is, I think unfortunately a lot of people somehow don't really read the book or don't really get the whole message I think Eric Ries does. I'm a bit fuzzy. It's been a long time since I've read The Lean Startup, but I know when I was at the Lean Startup conference a year ago, Eric was very much talking about, and I've heard him talk about before, this is not just about tactics for getting a company started. This is about building a different type of company, not rebuilding the type of company a lot of people have run away from, and people, and I've chatted with him, you know, kind of privately about this, where I think there's a shared frustration that he's trying to kind of lead people in that direction, and Jim Womack tries to talk to people about, you know, modern management, and it seems like sometimes people are either just, they have blind spots, or they're not receptive to that, or they don't want to engage in that side of the conversation. They gravitate back to, well, what are the tools I can use right now? Like, forget culture. I want to do value stream mapping, you know?
I think what I'd love to see, I don't think Lean Startup has its Toyota or even the cast of characters that say lean thinking features concerning lean. I've never read Lean Startup Management to me. So I'm eager to see that, is I guess what I'm saying. And until then, in some ways, it's kind of heuristic set of principles.
Yeah.
I mean, a company that makes avatars, it's such a heuristic little example of its own success. It's designed, you know, on a computer screen to mimic the world and to claim the success of this, you know, synthetic fabricated world as a validation of a set of principles is a weird, you know, foundational case of confirmation bias to me. I have an open mind. There's really exciting stuff about it. I'm just cynical by nature.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing a lot of the core lean literature thinking that I've been exposed to through Lean Enterprise Institute and the set of thinkers I've worked with. I don't see it really captured in this movement. So that's it for me. It's like,
All right. So let's move on and talk about some of the, you know, you mentioned the literature. You've played a big role in a lot of the books that people love within the lean literature. You mentioned The Gold Mine earlier, Michael and Freddie Ballet. You know, I've had Michael on the podcast talking about his later book in the series, Lead with Respect.
Mm-hmm.
So I would encourage people to go. That is episode 214, if people want to go and find that. But can you talk about that trilogy a little bit and, you know, the format of them? I've told Michael this. I've said the same to Pascal Dennis. And, like, I'm not a fiction reader, so business novels just don't grab me. So I haven't read Michael's books as much as people love them and as much as I respect Michael. Can you talk a little bit about the process or, you know, the thought behind framing those as novels? And I'm sure they reach far more people because I'm the weirdo who doesn't read fiction. But what? Give the listeners some perspective and background on that series.
Mark, you are not alone. I will just start by saying that. There's many people who don't like the business novel format. I think that's valid.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's at times with the Michael books, Michael and Freddie, you know, that there's literary flourishes that also don't always rub people the right way.
Mm-hmm.
That's okay. The reason that Michael and Freddie shared their lean knowledge through a fictional format is because it enabled them to tell individual stories of lean practice, of lean transformation, by rooting them in specific companies. Basically, there's the way you become lean is by doing lean. You know what I mean? It's like lean above all other practices is not something that you teach as an abstract set of practices and principles. And so any book that tries to give you this broad overview and tell you what lean is, I don't want to say incomplete, but it's missing the kind of messy nature of how you really learn lean.
Sure.
So these books are all messy, and I really like that. they say, okay, we're just going to tell one story and show how there's a problem up front, and with the help of a sensei, because you really, really need a sensei, alas. The people involved start to frame what that problem is and then take countermeasures. But these are always very Gemba-based, specific, immediate approaches that show how the system is creating waste, that challenge the people doing the work and subsequently challenge their managers. You know, it always, each of the books is comprehensive in some ways, but episodic and specific in the way they sequence the problems and show how you make things better somewhere. And then because Lean is a systems approach, it creates new problems. And then you tackle those new problems. And you do so in a learningful way. You always do so not instrumentally, you know, not just to make money or even expose waste. All of these approaches are designed, yes, to expose waste and create tension in the flow, so that you have to stop when things aren't going right and, you know, learn what's not right and respond. But there's a kind of messy sequence to learning lean, which has to do with that you learn it by doing it. So, yeah. So the books are novels to just try to capture that specific quality. You know, this is a different way to reveal how people learn lean.
Yeah. And so, you know, you mentioned, you know, those first projects you were involved in, Lean Solutions is a very, you know, kind of, you know, typical nonfiction business book. You have the Ballet series of business novels. Managing to Learn is another book with its own kind of unique, challenging format that is, I don't remember there being, like, to me, the thing I roll my eyes at with business novels is, you know, the subplot of the lead character and his troubled marriage at home and, you know, but I don't think Managing to Learn got into backstory of John Shook and his sensei. But can you talk about, you know, that decision to do the sort of dual parallel story format of, gosh, I'm blanking out, Sorensen and...
Porter and Sanderson.
Porter and Sanderson. I'll blame Jet Lag for not remembering that. But, you know, telling those stories in parallel from each of their perspectives was a very unique approach.
Sure. So Managing to Learn was a book I believe we published in 2006, and it's written by John Shook, currently the chairman and CEO of LEI. Mm-hmm. And, you know, along with Jim and Dan, really one of the key lean thinkers. So it's deeply informed by John's experience as, he was the highest American, I think, to work at Toyota in Toyota City. And
I
was
think he
really,
was the first.
Could be.
Yeah.
You know, and went on to be instrumental with the NUMMI plant and TSSC. And John has, by the way, this wonderful capacity to reflect on his own experience and put his back, you know, and put that into words that resonate with people in a very kind of touching and instructive way. So John had worked on a book earlier with Mike Rother called Learning to See, which shared the principles of value stream mapping. Learning to See was absolutely designed as a managerial book and not a tool book. And I know this from having talked to Jim, John, and the folks at LAI. It was meant to help people reveal waste through using this common practice at Toyota as a way of better management, delivering more value, and many aims of lean management. Learning to See was a kind of runaway success. And people used it as a tool book. We can use this really cool map to find out where we're doing wasteful stuff and then optimize the processes. Let's just correct it.
Let's do A3s. I mean, looking at it as a tool, right?
Well, but this, so this is prior to managing to learn.
You're talking about learning the C. Right. Yeah. Learning the C, about value stream mapping. Again, I'll blame JetLag. Sorry.
you can keep blaming it. Sure. I get to blame it too. So I was working, and just, I've always been an independent contractor. I'm not an employee of LAI. They've just been my primary client and a delight, obviously. What a gift. So there was this notion that John now could write a book on A3.
Right.
And I'll say I was part of the editorial team, and we came up with this idea that using the A3 template as a structure could be a really nifty way to, you know, organize the book and teach people how to use A3. Because of his experience with learning to see, John deeply believed that he didn't want this book to become another popular tool book, which merely extracted this powerful tool, but missed the deeper underlying reason for it. So, and honestly, all you can ever do with the product is make it the best thing you can and tell people how to use it, but they're going to use it the way they choose to. That is their kind of prerogative.
Sure.
So we had a lot of conversations. You know, John, Jim Womack was on the team. This great guy, George Tananez, who has contributed to many LAI books. Mm-hmm. We basically got to this point where it was like, well, why don't you write two books? One will be from the perspective of the person creating the A3. And that will be a little more focused and instrumental on its value as a problem-solving tool. You know, he'll come up with a better approach to the problem that's given him. And the other book will be written by this person's manager, who will share the basis for using the tool and kind of share what this person is thinking about and provide context to his, and I'm using gender here, his or her, basis for assigning the A3 and helping kind of reveal the context. You know, you don't want people jumping to solutions. You want to encourage inquiry. You want to base decisions in facts from the Gemba. And so we went down this path and pretty quickly said, well, let's just put the two books together. So the dual columns was a countermeasure to a problem we were facing. Mm. And the problem was, I'm not expressing it as a gap. We wanted to avoid a repeat of having a popular book be perceived as simply a tool book.
Yeah.
Extracted for, you know, short-term instrumental point optimization purposes. So that was our best effort to create a dynamic where you could see the tool in action as well as the frame, the reason for it, and the thinking of the manager. And, I've always loved that book. I think it was a lot of fun, and it's become really popular. It contributed, unfortunately, to, yes, a lot of adoption of A3s as a tool. You know, what can you do? The book was written with a purpose in mind. I think it's a good book, and if people have used it in a certain way, they're not wrong. That's not the thing. And again, speaks to my sometimes frustration with people claiming to be right and orthodox and the only teacher. You know, there has to be open mind. about the sharing of this knowledge. And if people, anyways, that's a point being, the book has been really, I think, popular and successful and has helped folks with this.
Right.
So.
Right. Well, and let's, in the time we've got left, at least touch on a couple of authors and other books you've been involved with. And people who've also been guests here on the podcast series, Dan Markovitz, who I consider to be a good friend of mine, with his book, A Factory of One and Building a Fit Organization. Will you talk about some, you know, your thoughts on Dan's books?
Sure. And actually, parenthetically, to even mention Dan brings a smile to my face. I just have to say, like, one of the reasons I stuck with Lean is, I mean, this sounds so happy, but I love the people I work with. It's there's just something about people who are real serious Lean thinkers that's very engaged in the world, very kind of optimistic, but not falsely so. Mm-hmm. It's really, for me, it's been a privilege. Like, I work with Dan, and I mean, John Shook is a great guy.
Yeah.
Jim Womack, oh my God, you know, I mean, I love Jim. Dan Jones, mm-hmm. Michael Ballet is a really good friend. It's just like I've been very fortunate. You know, I think the people who do the Lean work tend to have, just bring something to the table that makes this work great. So forgive that digression, but.
No, that's a good point. I agree with you. Yeah.
Yeah. And, Dan is just a really good guy, smart thinker, and he has taken Lean thinking in some new directions. I got to know Dan just through the work, and he basically, you know, just served as his editor for his two books. Mm-hmm. I think his first book is terrific, A Factory of One. Helps people see how these Lean principles can apply at a personal level. I think that and Jim Benson's book, Personal Kanban, are really the best books in the field. Mm-hmm. And it's really practical, Dan's book. It's really smart. And, you know, it was a lot of fun to work on. And I definitely nagged Dan to do the next book, which is Building the Fit Organization. And I gotta say, if there's a Lean Solutions type thing for any book, recent book, I'd say it's Dan's. I mean, Building the Fit Organization is a great book. It really creates an ambitious metaphor and then details what it means. He tells companies, you know, he says Lean's really about being fit. I mean, Dan's great in saying don't get caught up with the Japanese terminology and don't try to be Toyota. Just think about what Lean is saying, you know, and then he tells you how to do it. And he bases his recommendation on a very smart synthesis of Lean practice.
Yeah.
And he captures it within what I think is an elegant and sticky framework.
Yeah.
I mean, both of his books have been successful. I think that Fit Organization could be more so. Mm-hmm. And that's not saying anything about Dan or anything. It's because I hold the book in high regard. So listeners, go buy Dan Markovitz, Building the Fit Organization. On a personal note, that book has won a Shingo. I think I'm up to 8
that you've been involved in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
3 Ballet, Managing to Learn, both books by Dan.
Art Burns, The Lean Turnaround.
Art? I guess The Lean Turnaround didn't win the Shingo.
No.
You want to talk about Art?
Yeah, we've only got a couple of minutes, but Art Byrne from Wiremold, back in the day, and then author of The Lean Turnaround. I've interviewed Art. We're going to do a podcast soon on the new book, which is The Lean Turnaround Action Guide. Is that right?
Yes, it is. and naturally put art under this category of, oh my God, I'm so lucky to work with these folks. Mm-hmm. Art is the real deal. I mean, Art led Wiremold. He led 30 companies through lean turnarounds through his private equity work. And Art is so grounded. You know, he's gruff and direct and completely cares about people, and he does what he says. You know, like, Art is the real deal. Not like any others aren't, but so I worked with Art. I was his editor on The Lean Turnaround, which was published by McGraw-Hill 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, you love all your babies. That book is, I think, just terrific. And my work as an editor often is to do as little as possible. You know, I worked very hard to be restrained and let Art speak in his own voice, which I think comes across in that book.
And it
is very good, succinct. It shares Lean on a, I think, on a more systematic basis, and shares his viewpoint. Some might see it old school, Kaizen based. I see it as more than that.
Or Kaizen event based, which...
Yeah, and I believe it's more. I believe that it is through this introduction to it that people are converted, and it's done with respect for people and patience, and done thoroughly and with fortitude over time. It does engage the people, and Art is not about layoffs. I mean, I don't even feel the need to defend it. I'm just saying that his book starts there and then is, in my mind, one of the few books to show you how you expand and do this as a strategy, how it informs investment decisions and acquisition decisions and falls through to the bottom line and enterprise value. So I thought, I'm sorry, that was a great book. And now we have just published a sequel that's called The Lean Turnaround Action Guide. Also published by McGraw.
And I'll be interviewing Art real soon about that. So I'll encourage people to keep an eye out for that. Tom, I'm really sorry. We are literally out of time. I know it's an arbitrary cutoff for podcast length, but as scheduling in the real world occurs, we're bumping into time. Tom, I really want to thank you for being a guest here. Again, Tom Ehrenfeld, has been our guest, sharing reflections on a lot of books and projects and perspectives that you've been involved in. How can, as a final thought, how can people find you and connect with you online, social media, places like that?
I'm kind of under the radar. I mean, I've talked about the books I've worked on. I work as a, you know, freelance editorial consultant. My email is tomehrenfeld@gmail.com. Reach out if you have any questions. Absolutely. My book is A Startup Garden. I will be writing my own books again. Absolutely. Yes, I will. And I'm on Twitter under my name as well. Mostly Lean, sometimes other griping. But So, I mean, Mark, listen, I think it was 15 years ago, we became friends because I was a fan. I read your Lean blog when it first started.
Well, it was more like 10, 11 years ago, but yeah.
Oh, it only feels like 20.
It only feels like 15.
Yeah, but it was so good and so thorough. I was tugging at the sleeves of people at LEI and saying, hey, look at this guy's so good. So the feeling is mutual. I it's really kind of a privilege to be on the blog. I thank you. And I think your books are great. You know, this sounds, but yeah, I'm a big supporter of yours. So this is really a lot of fun.
Well, thank you. And Tom, always a pleasure to talk to you. Glad we could finally have a chat that we record here for the podcast. We'll talk again soon, I hope.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Lean Blog Podcast. For Lean news and commentary updated daily, visit www.leanblog.org. If you have any questions or comments about this podcast, email Mark at leanpodcast@gmail.com.
Hey, podcast listeners. I'm excited to announce the release of the audiobook version of my new book, The Mistakes That Make Us, Cultivating a Culture of Learning and Innovation. Listen and dive into powerful insights on fostering growth through mistakes. Whether you're a leader, entrepreneur, or just trying to get better at learning from mistakes, this audiobook is for you. Get it now on Audible, Amazon, and Apple Books. Visit mistakesbook.com for more info.